Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that can go on.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for January 14th, 2018. This is our weekly look inside the world of politics and policy. We'll take you from City Hall to the State House and all the way out to Washington, D.C. Yeah, it's time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot, hot cup of coffee this morning, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, that brief warm respite late last week was surely needed, and now I'm ready for another one. The temperature drop and the winds were really kind of getting brutal at the end of the last work week, but it is January, I know. We should take what we can get, and now we've got snow coming in the forecast, too.
Yes, we do. Several inches possible by the time this system has moved through. It will start later this afternoon into tonight and into tomorrow. So, you know, you could see 3 inches overnight, an additional 1 to 2 for tomorrow. So perhaps a total of 4 to 5, depending on where you are.
Yeah, and of course, snow overnight means an interesting morning rush hour commute tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. And it's Monday, too, by the way.
Yeah, and a Monday, right. Get your week started. It is Martin Luther King Day on Monday, so that means that state and federal offices are closed.
No mail.
No mail. That might reduce a bit of the commute traffic, but nevertheless, be vigilant with the roads. And I heard you say that they're talking about the snow starting this afternoon.
Right. Right, late this afternoon, around 5, and then continuing into tonight. Also, gusty winds. So in the open areas, you know, the old blowing and drifting snow can take place. And with these colder temperatures, you know, the snow will not be that heavy wet snow. So it'll be, you know, it will be indeed be blowing around.
Oh man, and frankly. Even when the temperatures took that fall, that precipitous fall on Thursday evening, it still wasn't that bad out, except the winds were just, the winds have been fierce lately.
Yeah, right.
And,
right. I hate to say this, but not until Thursday are we going to see 30.
Yeah, but.
Thursday, Friday, in the upper 30s on Friday.
But we'll be in the 20s.
Yeah, we'll be in the 20s. So, you know, we're not looking at the, you know, the absolute deep freeze that we had right at the first of the year.
Right. So, I mean, I'm okay for that. And
it is January.
It is January, like I said. Sam mentioned we've got an early Blackhawks game today with an original six matchup against the beloved Detroit Red Wings.
Those damn Red Wings.
Detroit sucks. All right. Let's, and I'm going. I'm going to the game.
Ooh.
Yes.
Are you bringing 20?
No, I'm sorry.
What?
Sorry. But I can't say enough about Jeff Glass in playing goal. You know, we all know the story. 32 years old, drafted 2004, played in Siberia. I mean, the game the other night against Winnipeg was some of the best goaltending I've ever seen.
Yeah, he stopped 31 of 32 shots.
And several of them, I think at least 3 breakaways and several point blank shots. And I'm sorry he didn't get the shutout win, but he got the win. And that was big because I think Winnipeg had come in at least 5 in a row with victories. So, I mean, just a huge, huge win. And if we can just keep the momentum going here, we've got I forgot that it's bye week next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep forgetting that NHL bye week thing. It just seems such a misnomer. But at least maybe we can, you know, recapture some of the momentum here, because it has been a frustrating season.
Just trying to hang on, and this is all, of course, without Corey Crawford, their all-world goaltender, who's been out for weeks now, and we don't know exactly when he's going to come back.
Correct.
Still day-to-day, upper body. whatever that means.
Right.
But Chicago just playing for their lives pretty much every game. I mean, you look at the standings, Dallas has the last spot right now in the West. They have 51 points. San Jose has 50. Chicago has 50. Colorado, 49. Anaheim, 49. This is going to go all the way down to the wire.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I will tell you that Winnipeg game was watching on TV, but it was just a fun game to watch. It was just so open-ended and not what you're going to see in playoff style. And I have a feeling things may, you know, tighten up at the end with the chase for the playoffs. But it was just fun to watch, just kind of an open-ended both sides skating game. And that's the one problem I think the Hawks have had, is they just haven't had the fleet feet this year. That's one of the problems. But it was good to see that kind of a game, and good to see them take that win, particularly after losing 2-1 against Minnesota just a couple of days before, because those are the games we got to win, are those 2-1 games.
Is your aunt feeling good about Minnesota?
Today? I don't know.
Just in general.
Well,
they are ahead of the Hawks in the standings.
Yeah, well, she's always feeling good about Minnesota, but I haven't checked her in on the Vikings yet. And who's favored in that one?
Minnesota's favored by 5.
That's a healthy number. And I assume it's at Minnesota?
Yes.
And that's the 3:00 game today.
Yeah, I think like 3:40. It's the only game that'll be indoors all weekend. Most of these games are around 15, 20 degrees.
Yeah.
Think
of
where they're being played. You know, New England and then Pittsburgh. And then yesterday, Philadelphia was freezing cold, too. So all these games have been outside. Minnesota, of course, it'll be probably 5 under outside, but the game will be indoors.
Well, and that I watched some of the Philadelphia-Atlanta game, and it was the Eagles just looked very, very sloppy. And I didn't think that they would be able to hold on in the end. I mean, a couple of fumbles in the handoff from quarterback to running back. A missed extra point that hit two of the posts and fell wide. I wasn't too optimistic for the Eagles advancing, but they have. And New England, what can you say? I mean, this is how many years in a row that they're playing in the championship game?
7
years in a row.
In the AFC title game.
Yeah, that's just monster. That's just monster. But
I will say one thing, too. If you need a reason to root for somebody, I would root for Philadelphia and their kicker, Jake Elliott. He kicked at Lions Township.
Really?
Yeah, 3-for-3 yesterday for the Eagles, including a 53-yarder.
And that was the difference, wasn't it?
Yep, and he's from Western Springs, so he's a Chicagoan, pretty much.
All right, well, there's something to keep in mind. Well, it'd be interesting. I'm hoping that the Hawks game kind of wraps up just in time to fade right into the Vikings-Saints game today. That
it is like now 7 below in Minneapolis.
And their fans are insane. They're out of their minds. They tailgate starting at... they're probably tailgating right now.
I'm sure they are.
With no shirts on.
Right. Ah.
Oh, they're nuts.
Well, nobody's fault but their own if they get frostbite.
They're accustomed.
They don't care, Sean. They're in the playoffs.
That's right.
And they don't need that foot.
So, Sam, I am curious, with the new coaching hires,
yes,
with the Bears and keeping Fangio, that was a big keep, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's half the battle when you bring in a new head coach. Who's on the staff? The staff is so important. And to retain Fangio, it keeps everything that they've built on the defensive side of the ball. It keeps that train moving, right? You don't have to reallocate your positions, and you don't have to teach new schemes. It'll be an easy transition. There won't be much of a transition, I guess, for that matter, on the defensive side of the ball. And that's huge, because Nagy's going to call all the plays. He's already said that. So he'll deal with the offense. Fangio will deal with the defense. And everybody will be happy.
Well, I'm hearing good vibes out of Hallis Hall, which we haven't heard in a long time. So at least there's something to be optimistic about, but not overtly optimistic here.
I did hear this, though. Their special teams coach, they hired him from Cleveland and talked about how good he is and he gets players prepared. Somebody said, he's from Cleveland. They're terrible. You know, because Cleveland's only had one win since December 15.
True.
I thought that was funny.
Yes, but come on, this is a whole new team structure. Let's see if we can't get something on the right side of the ball here for the Bears going into the next season. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam has the latest sports. Producer Cassara is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at symbol Sunday Spin. Engineer Bob is wondering where his right glove has gone. As always, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, after we catch up on the news and sports at 7:30, we'll speak to Democratic State Representatives Mike Zaleski of Riverside and Jamie Andrade of Chicago. They're both members of a new Illinois House Cybersecurity Committee. And we'll talk about something we've all heard a lot about, but maybe don't know that much about. We'll talk about Bitcoin. After the latest news and sports at 8 o'clock, we'll begin speaking with some of the Democrats vying for the nomination for Illinois Attorney General. After the 8 o'clock news, we'll speak to Jesse Ruiz. He's currently the president of the Chicago Park District Board. After a final take on the news and sports at 8:30, we'll speak to another Democratic primary contender for the Attorney General nomination, Aaron Goldstein. He's the 33rd Ward Democratic Committeeman. That's all coming up. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin on this chilly Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. And what a week it's been. It's only the second week of the year, too. We've gone from Oprah to Haiti, as President Trump continues to dominate the news, something he appears that he wants to do, but not always in the way he'd like to do it. Of course, we ended last week with the world still buzzing about the president's closed-door talk with staff and members of Congress on immigration and his description that we shouldn't take immigrants from blank whole countries like Haiti and from Africa. After his description became public, the White House didn't deny it. They even said it played to the president's base. But when the people on his favorite program on Fox and Friends suggested his terminology was a bit too much, he appeared to try to deny he described those countries as blank holes, or at least parse a difference between Haiti and African countries. But the denial didn't go very far. Illinois senior senator, Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, was in the room, and here's what he had to say.
Of his comments, said things which were hate-filled, vile, and racist. He used those words advisedly. I understand how powerful they are, but I cannot believe that in the history of the White House, in that Oval Office, any president has ever spoken the words that I personally heard our president speak yesterday. You've seen the comments in the press. I've not read one of them that's inaccurate. To no surprise, the president started tweeting this morning denying that he used those words. It is not true. He said these hate-filled things, and he said them repeatedly.
Now, it is a bit of a stretch to imagine that similar words had never been uttered in the Oval Office before. So there is that. But the fact of the matter is, it's not necessarily the words. It's kind of the overall picture of what that paints the United States, the presidency, and its representation to the world. And remember, that meeting came a day after another meeting with members of Congress to discuss immigration and whether there could be any agreement on the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. That's the one known as DACA. Democrats want it before January 19th and as part of an agreement to fund the government. That meeting also came in the fallout of the book Fire and Fury, which raised issues about Trump's mental stability. And in that meeting, which was held in front of the cameras and very cordial, Trump maintained that funding for a border wall with Mexico had to be part of any deal.
Is there any agreement without the wall? No.
You need it. John, you need the wall. I've been changing your tune. I love not to build the wall, but you need the wall. And I will tell you this, the ICE officers and the Border Patrol agents, I had them just recently up. They say if you don't have the wall, you know, in certain areas, obviously, that aren't protected by nature, if you don't have the wall, you cannot have security. You just can't have it. It doesn't work. And part of the problem we have is walls and fences that we currently have are in very bad shape. They're broken. We have to get them fixed or rebuilt. But, you know, you speak to the agents, and I spoke to all of them. I lived with them. They endorsed me for president, which they've never done before, the Border Patrol agents and ICE. They both endorsed Trump, and they never did that before. And I have a great relationship with them. They say, sir, without the wall, security doesn't work. We're all wasting time.
Now, as I said, this meeting was held largely in front of the press cameras. It came after the questions about the president's mental state and was an effort to kind of show that he had an understanding of the issues, though at one point when he was asked by Senator Dianne Feinstein of whether he would support a clean DACA bill, that's the president said yes and was hastily corrected by a Republican member of Congress who said no, that it also had to include efforts towards border security like the wall. But Dick Durbin sat alongside Trump at that earlier meeting, and he made his pitch for what's known as the Dreamers.
There is a sense of urgency that's felt by many of us when it comes to this issue. There are many of these young people who are losing the protection of DACA on a daily basis. As of March 5th, 1,000 a day will lose DACA protection. 900 of them are members of the U.S. military. 20,000 of them are school teachers. In my state of Illinois and city of Chicago, there are 25 of them in medical school who can't apply for a residency if they lose their DACA status. So lives are hanging in the balance of our getting the job done. We've got the time to do it. In a matter of days, literally of days, we can come together and reach an agreement. And when that happens, I think good things will happen in other places, and we'll see some more progress here in Washington.
Of course, that meeting coming before the private meeting that has now upended, apparently, any deal on DACA. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on a chilly North Michigan Avenue, just out on the Storm Center patio. Thankfully, the winds, there are winds, but not quite as what they're predicted to be along with the snow. Joining me here in the studio is State Representative Mike Zalewski from Riverside, Democrat from Riverside. And right now on the phone is Jamie Andrade, Democrat from Chicago. And I wanted both of them here because there's been a new House committee that's created, and Representative Andrade is chairman of that committee, the Illinois House Cybersecurity Data Analytics and IT Committee.
It's a mouthful.
A mouthful? I didn't know that members of the House actually could put those words together.
It is a mouthful. Actually, that's the abbreviated name. It was actually Information and Technology, but they told me that's just too long.
it won't fit on the card, right?
Right.
Well, Representative Andrade, you're the chairman of this. What is actually the purpose of this committee? Is this, we're going to try to move Illinois into looking at things in the 21st century?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things is that this committee is directed to, right now, data analytics is the future. It's, you know, this is not my term, but one of the things is that data is now going to be the new natural resource of the future. And so what we're looking is also the technology, the protection of information, but also, as you know, we also have the new subcommittee, which is very exciting, that was just created, and Representative Zalewski is going to be the chairman of that committee, which is the distributed ledgers and cryptocurrency. So it's all around committee, but the thing is to make sure that the state of Illinois protects the information of our residents, but also that we move forward and we're a welcoming state for technology.
Well, Representative Zalewski, cryptocurrency, and, you know, like I said, people have heard the term Bitcoin, there's blockchain. I don't know what the heck that is. I mean, can you really give us the basic instruction here?
I've been walked through it a dozen to two dozen times.
And because this is you're not new to this. I mean, you've been looking at this for quite some time.
I was first brought to me last year, and Bitcoin was designed after the market crash to be a currency for which there would be no centralized reserve. So American money runs on the Federal Reserve. The beauty of Bitcoin and on these other forms of this is that it's traded on what's called a distributed ledger by virtue of code. Every time I give you a Bitcoin, there's a set of code generated that says that you got the coin and I gave it to you. It's all what's called a double spend problem. By virtue of that, by virtue of this ledger that shows from point A to point B, all this coin being traded, it's a decentralized database. The blockchain is what we're interested in government. We're interested in decentralizing databases. We're interested in getting rid of old, archaic ways of doing business. If we do that, we can make government a lot leaner, a lot stronger, a lot more efficient.
Well, how does cryptocurrency tie into Illinois and revenues and that kind of thing?
Well, it doesn't as much as the blockchain does. Okay. It's sort of like you try discovering...
So what is the blockchain?
The blockchain is a network upon which everything of these cryptocurrencies is traded, so that it's transparent. Everybody gets their own piece of ownership of it, and it's individualized. You own your own little piece of information. By virtue of that, by virtue of having this distributed ledger where everyone can see it, everyone gets a piece of it, it's a lot less centralized, it's a lot less archaic, and it has real potential for government.
With Bitcoin, I mean, as you say, it's not like our U.S. currency is backed by the Federal Reserve and that. But Bitcoin isn't really backed, is it?
It's a electronic currency. So to the extent that the U.S. government is involved, I don't think that you can say that it's similar in any way to a U.S. dollar. No.
No, it's almost like a trading item.
Correct.
And its value fluctuates much like a trading item does.
Correct.
So we see it showing up more and more, yet there are questions about, you know, regulation and legitimacy of trading and that kind of thing. Is that part of what this oversight does?
To Jamie's credit and to my credit, we've been very, very careful here that we don't want this to be viewed as burdensome. I mean, I would say, with all sincerity, one of the things the Rauner administration has done is a nice job of encouraging the growth here. New York put in some very stringent regulations early on this. They tried to almost regulate these guys out of business in New York. We gave them the come-hither approach and said, come to Illinois, realize that you're going to grow and prosper here. We put a task force together this past fall. Our report is due here any day now. We worked collaboratively with the agency and the administration to put forth a really good effort. The goal here is just to get people comfortable with this. It's not to regulate it.
And is there a role for it in the Illinois economy?
There's definitely a role for making government and more efficient, which is what we're all pressured to do by using blockchain. Again, you're going to see this task force report comes out that the blockchain has the potential to make people individualize their information, make government a lot leaner, a lot more efficient, which is what people are under enormous pressure to ask us to do.
So along with the cryptocurrency, there's larger elements at play here as far as, as Representative Andrade said about data analytics, which almost has become a new form of, I want to say, manufacturing in the state.
Correct.
And, you know, we are constantly having to deal with issues of data protection, data security, personal privacy. And I'm not sure that we've actually divined what the lines are here anymore.
No, especially when you see places like Experian get hacked. or was it Experian or TransUnion or Equifax? I can't remember all my credit bureaus. Equifax got hacked, and it was a centralized database. People's data was compromised, and that scared a lot of people. You know, government's a holder of a lot of your information, and blockchain has the potential to change that dynamic.
And I mean, by setting a blockchain kind of standard, are we kind of creating this kind of where the lines exist?
Yeah, I think we're fundamentally changing the relationship between holders of big information and the people to whom they submit their information, which is, again, what we want. Imagine a scenario where Karen Yarbrough's office, Recorder of Deeds, has really taken the lead on this. Imagine a scenario where you can track on the blockchain who puts a lien or a first mortgage or a second mortgage on your piece of property. And you get the release by virtue of the blockchain. You can see who's put a lien on it, who's put the second lien on it, and you can sort of manage that. Or imagine your health records. Instead of having to physically transfer your health records from point A to point B every time you gotta go see a doctor, you simply, what's referred in the vernacular as opening a hash, open a hash and let the doctor see your personal medical information. That's the revolutionary aspect of blockchain. That's what we want people to do, empower their own information.
Well, and, you know, particularly with medical records, because how many decades have we talked about, oh, we can make the healthcare system much more efficient and cost savings by implementing electronic records, right? And then you've got everybody's got a different system and all that kind of thing. And I mean, as you mentioned about the state of Illinois, too, that's been part of the problem for decades, is the different computer systems and different software, and computers don't talk to each other. This could bring that efficiency.
From everyone I've talked to, every expert Jamie and I have talked to, this has real potential to change the size and scope of a lot of different huge systems of things, for lack of a better word, and that's what we're really excited about.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representatives Mike Zaleski from Riverside and Jamie Andrade from Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. More of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by Democratic State Representative Jamie Andrade from Chicago and Democratic State Representative Mike Zaleski from Riverside. And they're both members of the Illinois House Cybersecurity Data Analytics and IT Committee. I'm not going to use the full name. As well as Representative Zaleski is the Cryptocurrency Subcommittee Chairman. And we're talking about issues about cybersecurity, data analytics, that kind of thing. One of the things I wanted to ask is, and we've seen this come up, obviously, the issue with the State Board of Elections and the involvement of Russian attempts to try to hack into the voter database, but more recently is the issue of the
cross-check.
The issue of cross-check and how the State Board of Elections just recently said, and let's explain, CrossCheck is interstate voter database based in Kansas, headed by Chris Kobach, who was the head of the now defunct Voter Integrity Federal Task Force that President Trump created. So that created a whole line of issues there. But number two was the fact, Group Indivisible Chicago, they looked into this, others looked into it, and the issue of how they were using software to protect voter databases, like from the DOS era, and the states that participate in this voter cross-check, it's to prevent multiple voter registrations and voting across state lines, but that the states participating in this, they all got the same password.
And they emailed the password.
Yeah, and then when you could email the and they emailed the password to everybody. So the state decided to remain in cross-check on a 4-4 vote, but the State Board of Elections said they were supposed to have this big meeting with Kansas officials on security protections and things like that. They never got anything. And so there's no more state data.
I just got a letter January 10th.
Right.
You know, and basically, you know, As of this date, we received no description of security enhancements from CrossCheck. We plan to review and discuss those proposed enhancements upon receipt. We are January 10th already.
Well, but they've received nothing, and they said no state voter data will be transmitted because they have not received those security enhancements. And, you know, when you're looking at CrossCheck, and I think part of their voter verification was the last four digits of a driver's license, and or Social Security, I think.
Social Security.
But that there are actually, like, programs, analytic programs, that with half, 50% certainty can figure out all the first digits of your Social Security number. And so, again, this whole issue of data security, personal privacy, I think we're all just catching up to things, aren't we?
Yes. We've been meeting regularly with Indivisible. Also, as this topic is just so huge, that we've been meeting with a lot of experts, and I do got to throw out thank you to, there's a law firm, Edelson PC, that has some professors from IIT that's been giving us some direction and some advisement, too, on the security.
I think that was one of the professors that actually appeared before the legislative committee on elections about the issue of cross-check and discovered some of these ways that could be broken into. But
I think the blockchain is, you know, voting is another area where the blockchain is going to matter at some point, because it's, again, imagine a scenario where instead of you having to submit your data to a centralized database, you're empowered to hold your own data on the blockchain, and then every time someone wants you to verify your address, you, again, enable it through the blockchain. You know, we want to get out of the business of being central holders of these big data situations, and we want to get into the business of people holding their own information on the blockchain and making and empowering them to be the gatekeeper into what government can and can't see.
So then ostensibly with blockchain, we wouldn't be subject to these huge data hacks where there's a centralized database.
Correct. But let's not underestimate the world of hackers.
Right. I think it would mitigate a lot of risk.
I just don't want to say it's 100%. Nothing in this world is 100%. Some death and taxes, but we really feel that blockchain has... there is a future in this, and we're looking very closely at it.
Now, I mentioned earlier with Representative Zaleski about the issue of regulation and the fact that New York, as far as Bitcoin was concerned, kind of went overboard in what it was doing. And I would agree there was a fine balance here, too, of, you know, trying to encourage new technologies. And, in fact, that's been one of the hallmarks, really, for some of the economic success in the city is by those high-tech incubator-type things. But at the same time, there does seem to be some need of a regulatory scheme. Isn't that the case?
The Security Exchange Commission is looking at very closely. Here, for example, one of the things that I just learned is with cryptocurrency, let's say if you use it as an IPO, is it a securities, is it a commodity? Is it underground currency? And I think that's one of the things that Security Exchange Commission is looking at. And there's also the other organization that is in the past. They've always, like, fought each other of who's regulating what. And I think that's where in the situation. But here, Illinois has the Chicago Board of Exchange. We have Chicago Mercantile Exchange, who has already started trading for futures and with cryptocurrency. So I think we want to tread very lightly, because I don't think even the federal government has which direction they're going. And so we are concentrating on the technology behind it, and we'll move from there, right?
Well, are other states, you know, in the same boat as we are? Are some states ahead of us in this?
I don't know that there's anyone ahead of us. Illinois, Chicago specifically, has CME, CBOE, has a lot of these growing market exchange commodities traders that are based in the West Loop or in the South Loop or in the Loop. And, you know, without naming names, you can go to them. And half of the room these days is trading. Half of the room is writing code. And what we're finding out is they're writing code on blockchain now. The way Bitcoin works is you have to constantly write code and dig deeper and mine the code for the Bitcoin to be worth more. So this is huge economic activity. It's big business for the city of Chicago. As you know, you mentioned earlier, what are we going to do to sort of turn some of this economic activity around, given that the industry is sort of changing? Instead of we're not becoming an economy of widget makers anymore. We're becoming an economy of building huge data farms and data centers that can control servers. You know, I don't know how much HQ2 is going to be manufacturing things as much as it's going to be.
See, now you're speaking code.
Yeah.
HQ2.
Amazon is going to be a huge repository for data. And so that, this is sort of a recognition of what our economy is going to look like in the next iteration.
And that's going to, and we're seeing this evolution of it through, as we've talked before, digitalization and globalization and robotics, artificial intelligence. All of this is going to vastly reshape the world we may not be living in.
Right.
But certainly, and driverless cars.
I'll be out of a second time job.
It's something that Illinois needs to get a handle on, and kind of a lot. It's going to come, and it's where does everything fit in for our future economy?
Right. I asked the gentleman, we visited a company the other day, and I asked him, so who are these? Basically, some of our kids. I said, who are they? What are they? I said, the finance majors or something. And he said, actually, they're a lot of these traders are engineers. They're all software engineers. It says we found it easier to take an engineer and train that engineer to be a trader
than the other way around.
So because it's like you have literally a panel. Each person has a panel of 8 screens. Now, I'm literally thinking a huge. And so that's why I continue studying. I'm studying right now to learn SAS, you or all the software programs. But the future is changing, but we want to make sure that Illinois is included in that future.
We're going to have you guys back after we all get a...
Clear as mud, right?
Well, no, that is the issue. We're trying to talk about a quantifiable thing when it's not a quantifiable
Correct.
Thing.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
It's we're talking about virtual. Yes. And that's the future of our world is virtual. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Democratic State Representative Mike Zaleski from Riverside, Democratic State Representative Jaime Andrade from Chicago. We're talking about the Illinois House Cybersecurity, Data Analytics, and IT Committee, as well as the Cryptocurrency Subcommittee of that. Gentlemen, again, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you. Have a good day, morning.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Of course, as I've been saying about this morning, controversy still over the president's remarks about immigration. He goes from one meeting where seems like a very cordial discussion on immigration, saying he'll sign whatever is sent to him, closed door meeting. We get another view of the president. What kind of changes the tone here? Well, one advisor of the president is Stephen Miller, and he's the one who, if you remember, started during the Trump presidency by declaring that the president's actions should not be questioned. Well, Miller was on Jake Tapper's show last Sunday on CNN with questions surrounding the release of Fire and Fury, and the two of them had what I consider just to be a remarkable exchange.
The president's tweets absolutely reaffirmed the plain spoken truth. A self-made billionaire revolutionized reality TV and tapped into something magical that's happening in the hearts of this country. The people that you don't
has approval rating in the 30s. I don't know what magical you're talking about.
The people that you don't connect with and understand, the people whose manufacturing jobs have left, who've been besieged by high-crime communities, and who've been affected by a policy of uncontrolled immigration. Those voices, those experiences, don't get covered on this network. That's why, to prove the point, I was booked to talk about the very issues I'm just describing, and you're not even asking about them, because they're not interesting facts to you.
That's not true. I have plenty of questions on immigration. You attempted to filibuster by talking about your flight.
No, I'm not.
I want to ask you a question, because...
Don't be condescending. Jake,
the President and the White House...
The reason why I want to talk about...
The President and the White House...
The reason why I want to talk about the President's experiences, what I've seen with him traveling to meet dozens of foreign leaders, with his incredible work.
Okay, you're not answering the questions.
No,
I understand.
You have 24 hours a day of anti-Trump material. You're not going to give 3 minutes for the American people to hear the real experience of Donald Trump.
There's one viewer that you care about right now, and you're being obsequious. You're being a factotum in order to please him.
That was Stephen Miller, a White House advisor to President Trump, and Jake Tapper on CNN last Sunday. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Jesse Ruiz. He's a Democratic candidate for Attorney General. He's currently the president of the Chicago Park District Board. Mr. Ruiz, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start having the candidates in for Attorney General for the Democratic nomination. There's eight of you running for this office. And obviously, attention flows to the top of the ticket and the governor's race, particularly now that there's a governor's race on both sides, apparently. But I wanted to have you on. I mean, obviously, you had to be, like everybody else, surprised when Lisa Madigan decided that she was not going to seek re-election.
In fact, I was. I was out of town, and she's a friend. And I learned from my wife that Lisa was about to announce that she was not going to seek a fifth term. And I have actually expressed to Lisa and Attorney General Madigan in prior years of my interest in that office, because I think it's one of the best jobs, if not the best job, in government. And it's the one that I would actually run for, and now I'm doing so.
Why do you feel it is the best job?
Well, especially now, when, frankly, we were just listening to that clip, when you have a president who starts his political career by denigrating Mexican Americans, by denigrating subsequently new groups all the time. And so it's the last line of defense against an administration who's affronting our rights, our constitutional rights. And this is a constitutional moment of truth in our country. And so Democratic attorney generals have stood up and have challenged the president and have won in court consistently. And so it's especially a time when this office is critical, in addition to protecting consumers, in addition to protecting our environment, in addition to ensuring that we have open, honest, and transparent government. And you know, we also have a suit because the Trump Justice Department didn't want to pursue a consent decree with the city of Chicago following the report that came out just a year ago yesterday, following the Laquan McDonald shooting. So that's also going to be a critical new function of the Attorney General.
I want to ask you about the balance here, because a number of the candidates seeking this office have made the Trump presidency kind of this is the forefront, that they're the vanguard to fight that. What is the priority, though? I mean, balancing that versus the other duties of the office.
Sure. It's an additional line of work that unfortunately we have to do, but it's about protecting people's rights. It's about being the people's lawyer, their advocate, and if their rights are being affronted, we have to step up no matter where it's coming from. If it's coming from their Equifax leaking out their personal information and protecting their privacy, if it's against drug companies who are colluding to artificially inflate prices on drugs people need to survive and to live, be healthy, all those areas, whatever they, and the priorities change from time to time. I know when Lisa first came into office, we had a methamphetamine problem. That's not as important now as, and thankfully that's been addressed partly to her efforts, but now we have an opioid crisis, and so we have to address that and turn our focus. So it's constantly changing, new challenges, new issues that we have to confront, but we must confront them.
You just mentioned the opioid crisis, and, you know, a number of county state's attorneys also have joined in suing,
including the city of Chicago.
Yes.
As well,
which, I mean, does that represent kind of a new kind of, I'm not sure that I've seen that much of a coordinated effort on behalf of the legal system in government.
And that's where the Attorney General's office can play a role to convene as the chief legal officer of the state of Illinois, to convene all those other law enforcement offices, and those truly are law enforcement offices, and state's attorneys all over the state, and municipalities like the city of Chicago that are stepping up and leading the charge of coordinating, which is what Democratic attorney generals across the country are doing. You see more and more that they're, you know, joining together. It was the attorney generals of Hawaii and Washington State who first challenged the travel ban a year ago and were successful. And so they're getting better. And given the challenges that are coming out of the Trump White House, they're getting a lot of practice, unfortunately.
We're speaking with Jesse Ruiz, Democratic candidate for Attorney General. He's also the Chicago Park District Board President. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this chilly Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Jesse Ruiz, who's a Democratic candidate for Attorney General, trying to give some of these candidates a bit of attention as we move closer to the March 20th Democratic primary. And Jesse, just give us the short backgrounder on
Sure.
your bio, if you
will. Son of Mexican immigrants. Dad came here as a migrant farm worker. Not much formal education, but eventually landed with my mother in the south side of Chicago in the Roseland neighborhood where I grew up and my mom still lives. Then went down to the University of Illinois, earned my economics degree, came back, worked in the steel industry for a few years. Went back to live in Roseland, got involved in the community, started Little League teams, did junior achievement, the local grammar school, youth motivation program at Bowen High School, and then went back to school, went to law school, where I got to get to know Elena Kagan, who's my civil procedure professor, and Barack Obama, who I got to know, and turns out he had been a community activist in Roseland, and four blocks from where my home is, so we struck up a friendship over that common experience, and then been practicing law for the past 21 years, and all the time engaged in public service, primarily in public education, the State Board of Education, the Chicago Board of Education, interim CEO of Chicago Public Schools, U.S. Department of Equity, Excellence, and Equity and Excellence Commission, and so I want to put all that public service experience and my legal skills to work as the next Attorney General of Illinois.
One of the things that, and it comes up, I think, virtually every time, and even with Lisa Madigan having been in the office all the time, is the issue about public corruption and the role of the Attorney General in public corruption. And, you know, questions about, you know, has Lisa done enough, or just what can the Attorney General's office do when it comes to public
Sure.
corruption?
It can do a lot, and it needs expanded authority. That's why my first day in office, that's what I'll try to do, get statewide grand jury authority. Also,
Roland Burris tried that.
Yeah, well, we're
that was a long time ago.
And you know, there's some members of the General Assembly who are in this race now who have not tried that, and so we need those enhanced tools to make sure we can root out corruption wherever it is. But also, just you know, setting the standard. We have the Open Meetings Act, and I constantly critique my former colleagues at the Chicago Board of Education. They don't do board briefings in public. When I was chair of the State Board of Education, I would spend 2 days a month in Springfield. One full day was full board briefings, committees of the whole, where everyone got to see the entire work of the board in public, in a public open meeting. And I think that instilled trust and confidence in that way. The ethics of the organization and the integrity of the organization was there for everyone to see. There were no backroom deals, and so when I'm Attorney General, I will make sure that those meetings happen in public so that we make sure there are no backroom deals, we have trust, and there's integrity in all the systems. And, you know, frankly, also having an example of standing up, I was the first person who called out the hiring of the General Counsel at CPS and reported that to the Chief Ethics Officer that eventually led to Forrest Claypool having to resign. You know, I've always spoken out regardless of the situation. And he was a colleague at the time, and he's a good man, but he made a mistake. And even though people are your colleagues or your friends, if they make a mistake, you have to call it out. And I've always done that in my career.
Well, just touching back on statewide grand juries, and of course, one of the issues that has reasons it has traditionally gone nowhere is the concern that it's the issue of a turf war between the local state's attorneys and the attorney general, as well as potential of abuse by an attorney general to try to go after political enemies.
Sure. No, and I understand that, but I think the climate is ripe now for folks across our state and across our country who want to make sure that we have the open, honest, and transparent government we're paying for and we deserve. And so I think even the state's attorneys across the state would acknowledge that that climate is here, and we're all going to keep each other in check, but it's an expanded authority that will help the attorney general go further in this work.
What other priorities are you looking at?
You know, again, the opioid crisis is something we have to address and go after those drug manufacturers who know that these drugs are being overprescribed and know that they can't, you know, that the rate of these drugs going out into our communities is just so exaggerated. And they should be held accountable and responsible for that. And again, the consent decree that Attorney General Madigan was right to pick up the baton when the Trump Justice Department dropped it, wouldn't pursue it. You know, we need to make sure that we work and support our police department and our law enforcement, not only in Chicago, but, you know, there's been recent news of the shootings in suburban police departments as well that don't go investigated. So make sure we work in enforcing that consent decree. Probably the next several attorney generals will be living with that consent decree because they tend to go on for a while. We've had those in education. They go on for decades. And so making sure we work to support the department, but also make sure that they change and we bring about the changes into training and the supports we provide our police department and the accountability so that we have the police department that will be working to protect the community and have the faith in the community that allows them to do their job more easily as well.
Is there a balance, too, here again with the issue of, you know, law enforcement, and you as attorney general would be the top law enforcement legal officer mm-hmm. in the state? And, you know, obviously we see this kind of tension here between more accountability. We now have seen a history of troubling events in Chicago and around the country, as well as, you know, giving law enforcement the tool they need.
Sure, it's a balance. I mean, there's a great officers, you know, throughout the department, throughout our state, that put their lives on the line every day for us and to serve and protect us honorably. Some of the culture and some of the supports have to change. How are they trained? Are they, you know, do they have continuing professional education requirements? Now, as a lawyer, I even have to you know, have diversity training as part of my ongoing CLE credit requirements. I have to have mindfulness training. You know, there's a lot of trauma that officers see. Are we helping them deal with those issues and making sure they get the supports to deal with the trauma they have every day so that they can go out and you know, respectfully interact with the public and protect the public. And so we have to acknowledge that. They see a lot in their jobs, and we have to give them the supports that they need to deal with those things, that trauma they deal with, and also make sure that the protocols for use of deadly force are addressed and they get the proper training on these things.
Very quickly, 30 seconds, what differentiates you from the other candidates?
Well, a commitment to service. As I mentioned, when I got back to my Roseland community, I started working on bringing community policing to Chicago when, as former Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter used to say, when the only office I held was the highest office in a democracy. I was just a citizen, a guy in my 20s who, when I saw something that needed to be done in my Roseland community, I stepped up and did it. And I've always done that. And I've always spoken out when I've seen something that is wrong, regardless of the position I've held and regardless of who put me there. And I've never been shied away from challenging the folks in authority. So that's what I intend to do as their attorney general.
That's Jesse Ruiz. He's a Democratic candidate for attorney general. He's currently Chicago Park District Board President. Mr. Ruiz, thank you so much for joining me this
morning. Thank you.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. You know, it's very funny. Just a week ago, that Sunday night was the Golden Globe Awards, and all kinds of chatter about Oprah Winfrey after her appearance on the Golden Globes about whether she'd be a potential candidate for president in 2020. Some say she's thinking about it. Others who know her say she wouldn't do it. But back in October of 1999, when Donald Trump was considering a run for president then, he went on CNN, and Larry King asked him who he'd consider for a running mate.
You have a vice presidential candidate in mind?
Well, I really haven't gotten quite there yet.
Oprah.
I love Oprah. Oprah would always be my first choice.
Oprah.
Oprah, your competitor, right?
Yeah, Oprah's a competitor.
You know what? I'll tell you, she's really a great woman, though. She is a terrific woman. She's somebody that's very special. I have not even thought about it. I guess we'll see. We'll see. Maybe that's part of the whole process.
Would she be someone, I mean, kidding aside, that you might think
if she'd do it, she'd be fantastic. I mean, she's popular. She's brilliant. She's a wonderful woman. I mean, if she'd ever do it, I don't know that she'd ever do it. She's got...
You'd ask her.
She'd be sort of like me. I mean, I have a lot of things going. She's got a lot of things going.
But a ticket
that would be a pretty good ticket, but she's a very exceptional woman.
So the other day, the president was asked about a potential challenge from Oprah in a 2020 contest, but the president told reporters he doesn't think that'll happen.
Yeah, Oprah would be a lot of fun. I know her very well. You know, I did one of her last shows. She had Donald Trump, this is before politics, her last week. And she had Donald Trump, and my family was very nice. No, I like Oprah. I don't think she's going to run. I don't think she's going to run. I know her very well.
And that's President Trump, Trump v. Oprah. Stay tuned. Well, we're continuing our discussion with Democratic contenders for the nomination of Attorney General. Joining me now in the Showcase studio is Aaron Goldstein. He is the Democratic Ward Committeeman in the 33rd Ward. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
So you've been in the news lately. little incident on Friday. Why don't you talk about that? And how does that affect you as a candidate?
Yeah, so Friday afternoon, as you recall, it's a warm January day. We were out taking photos, and out of nowhere, a gun was put to the side of me, pressed up against me. I was told to give up my belongings. All I had with me was my phone. They seemed pretty irritated by that. I insisted I had nothing else. They then searched me. They then pointed the gun at the four other people that were working with me that are part of my campaign, and they took the cameras and other property and the phones and fled.
And as a candidate for Attorney General, does that have any impact on your candidacy as far as how you view this office or how you view life in general these days?
Well, it's a constant reminder of how precious life is. And I think, you never want to go through that, but to have that reminder is important. As far as how it affects the campaign, I'm not worried about that. I'm happy to go home to my wife and daughters and continue campaigning. It'll help me grow. Every incident that happens, every day that you're allowed to live, you grow and you learn more. But, you know, I still believe in the fundamental goodness of us all. So it hasn't changed my optimism at all.
Why don't you give us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, so I've been an attorney for 17 years. The first job I applied to when I came out of law school was to be a Cook County public defender. I didn't want to apply to any other job. I just had a fundamental belief in the Constitution, in the rights of us all, and defending poor people. That's what mattered to me the most. And I was a public defender for about 7 years. I went out into private practice where I did criminal defense as well as civil rights work. And now I'm back with the public defender's office. I'm a supervisor there. I'm also the committeeman, as you mentioned, of the 33rd Ward. For about 40 years, it was Dick Mell that was the committeeman and alderman. And in 2016, I defeated him.
And what motivated you to pursue that and obviously taking on a very established, entrenched political organization?
I think what happens, particularly with machine politics, is one of the reasons they win is because all the opponents believe they can't be defeated. So I like tough challenges. And the idea of running against someone who's been around for nearly 40 years was very intriguing, and not to mention all the things that could be done. And what happened, what a committeeman does and what a committeeman can do is incite the populace to vote, to be excited about electoral politics, to make sure we have good and fair judges that we're slating. That's something very important to me, because I see judges that are basically connected and then they get on the bench and they're not qualified. So I wanted to change that. So we started our own organization that evaluates judges in a very clear way, so that we know that we're endorsing the most qualified judge. So those are some of the reasons I really wanted to run for committeeman.
Now, I asked this question to Jesse Ruiz about a number of the Democratic candidates have seemed to have made it kind of their hallmark about who is going to be tougher in going up against the Donald Trump administration. And I guess, you know, what is the priority as Attorney General of, is it that? Is it to be an anti-Trump factor, or, you know, dealing with the office as it exists here in Illinois?
Yes, I mean, I think that's true. Every candidate in the race has expressed a desire to fight against Trump, and I will do that. But what really distinguishes me is my agenda, and this is a bold progressive agenda with three important planks. Number one is standing up to the big powers, and that includes the big banks and the corporations and Trump. Number two is real criminal justice reform. So ending mass incarceration, ending the drug war that really is one of the worst domestic policies we had in the last 50 years, and ending cash bail, which I've been part of in Cook County, which we're just about done. So what would happen is people would be sitting in jail because they can't post $100. That does no one any good. It's a waste of taxpayer money, and it's a burden on an individual for the most part who's charged with a pretty petty offense. And then we also must have police accountability. And I support Attorney General Madigan's attempt at getting a consent decree, but I believe the community should be involved. And finally, the third plank to my agenda is fighting corruption. So those are the things that I'm really focused on. It includes Trump, and I will fight him every single day, but it's obviously more than that.
We're speaking with Aaron Goldstein. He's Democratic candidate for Attorney General. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by Aaron Goldstein. He's the 33rd Ward Democratic Committeeman, and he's also one of eight people seeking the Democratic nomination for Attorney General for the state of Illinois. Were you expecting Lisa Madigan to not seek another term?
Not at all. It was the furthest thing from my mind. I remember I was at a conference in Detroit, and I was looking at my phone. I noticed the news. I didn't think anything of it. Other than it being a news event. And then I had a series of phone calls and text messages and social media requests. Are you going to run? Are you going to run? And again, I didn't think anything of it. But as more and more people talked about it, and I thought about more and more and about the opportunity to actually really do so much good with the office, I just was compelled to run.
One of the continued questions that comes up in attorney general races is the issue of public corruption and the role of the attorney general. You mentioned corruption as on your one of your planks. How would you go about pursuing efforts to prosecute public corruption?
The first thing I will do, pretty much day one, is form a public integrity bureau. We have a model, and that is Eric Schneiderman in New York, who's the attorney general there. He has formed a public integrity bureau, which basically their sole responsibility is to investigate corruption. So we need to prioritize it. We need to dedicate attorneys' hours and resources towards fighting corruption. The next step is really to work with state's attorneys throughout the state, the federal government, the U.S. Attorney's Office, to coordinate investigations. There are limitations, at least perceived limitations, as to what the state attorney general can do to prosecute corruption. But there's nothing stopping us from investigating it and shining light on it. And I think that'll go so much further than what has been done the last, you know, 15 years.
So more as an investigative arm and then referral to local prosecutors, those kinds of things, because one of the issues in the past has been the, you know, inability basically to bring any kind of a criminal prosecution.
Correct. At the very least, an investigative arm. You need to jump in the game. You need to start the process before you could go any further. So if we're not even investigating corruption or taking those calls and looking into those things, then we're not doing anything. But once you investigate it, if you can hand it off to whoever can prosecute it, or we will try and prosecute these cases. There's an argument to be made that these prosecutions can be made. But we also have to advocate for the law to expand so that the Attorney General has that power to have that statewide grand jury.
How would you assess Lisa Madigan's tenure, and what would you do differently?
Yeah. I think the way I assess and describe Lisa Madigan's tenure is competent but cautious. The office is a competent office. It's done a lot of good things, but she's been cautious in her approach in really fighting against Trump and fighting against the big banks and corporations, criminal justice reform, which outside of this most recent attempt to get a consent decree, and after Laquan McDonald, really nothing was done on police accountability and criminal justice reform. And then corruption, obviously nothing has been done. She said in 2003, when she was running for attorney general, that she would fight corruption, even if it meant investigating her own father. And since that time, nothing's been done.
You'd look into her father.
I would look into whoever is committing corruption. I can't go into this office saying there's one person I'd look at, but I also can't say that I'd foreclose it. So if there was something about any individual, we would investigate it to the fullest.
When you talk about issues like going after the big banks, what are you specifically talking about?
Well, it's, you know, as Attorney General, in essence, the Attorney General is the lead legal officer of the entire state. And just like a prosecutor, you have prosecutorial discretion. And a prosecutor can choose to be with the regular Illinoisans or be with the big powers. So, for example, if you look at some of my opponents, they've taken campaign contributions from big tobacco, big utilities. So the question is, are they going to prosecute them? Are they going to go after them? We have pending lawsuits against big tobacco and big utilities. What will they do? Are they going to stand with us? Are they going to stand with those big powers? So it's, number one, a mind state that you're going to make sure that we're going to go after the big powers if they're doing something wrong. In terms of big corporations, for example, we have the NRA. All these gun manufacturers are flooding guns into the state of Illinois. Why aren't we looking at what the gun manufacturers, their responsibility in bringing guns into our state? And I think there's an opportunity. If you look at Newtown and what happened there, there's actually a pending lawsuit. It's up before the Connecticut Supreme Court. They sued the manufacturer that gave that gun that basically Adam Lanza got the gun from. And I think there's some opportunity there as far as, you know, the gun manufacturers. I think there's opportunity as far as when the big utilities pollute and take advantage of consumers. There's an opportunity there to look at them and make sure that they're following the law and not taking advantage of the people.
You know, when you look at the Attorney General's office, some people see it as a stepping stone for something else, to go further in their political career. We've seen it in the past. Is that something that you see this office?
I see this office as a great opportunity to do justice. That's what's most important to me. Trump has been a big problem for this country, certainly from my perspective. I think he's violated the Constitution pretty much every single day. He's violated federal law every single day. And he's violated just traditional norms of politics. And the one positive that has come out of that is state attorneys general throughout the country have realized their power in standing up for the Constitution, standing up for the law. So this, to me, is a great opportunity to do good, to do justice, and that's all I'm thinking about.
One of the other big parts of the office is consumer protection. And are Illinois consumers being adequately represented by the office now?
I think Lisa Madigan has had a very good tenure in standing up for consumers and for consumer protection. So I don't see a whole lot being changed. But I also, as I said, competent but cautious. I think there are some opportunities that I will look into. We can't be so cautious that, hey, maybe this case wins, maybe this case doesn't prevail. We should be willing to take those big risks to fight for the people of the state of Illinois.
That's Aaron Goldstein. He's Democratic candidate for Attorney General. He's also the 33rd Ward Democratic Committeeman. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much.